All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this, the 30th day of March, 2021. And I do like to remind you that I'm the editor of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. You can sign up for that by going to miningstocks.com. Call our office here in New York to sign up as well, 718-457-1426 during normal work hours. We also like to put in a plug for my friend Chen Lin. What is Chen buying? What is Chen selling? Especially if you have an interest in the biotech sector. And he has really come up with some very exciting stories, a couple of which I'm following in my own newsletter in the biotech sector. So what is Chen buying? What is Chen selling? And we also would like to put in a plug for Michael Oliver, especially when he's on our show. He is with us today, and we'll get to Michael in just a minute. It's OliverMSA.com for his excellent work. We want to thank all of you for listening and making this show one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also, encourage you to send along questions, whatever comments, questions you might have, send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. And we do want to thank our sponsors for making the show economically viable. This week's sponsors are Novo Resources, Sitka Gold Corp, El Oro Resources, Irving Resources, Hannon Metals, Fury Gold Mines, Great Bear Resources, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, and Firefox Gold. I've titled today's show, President Biden's Next $3 Trillion Boondoggle. David Stockman, Michael Oliver, and Michael Timmons are guests in this week's show. Leave it up to the New York Times to remind us why prosperity is not just around the corner, and that's regardless of whether or not the force feeding of $6 trillion of everything bailouts into the economy during the past 365 days causes the 2021 GDP stats to make up for the 2020 plunge brought on by the virus patrol, end of quote. That's a quote from David Stockman in his March 23 Stockman's Corner article discussing why the current exponential trend in government spending is leading the U.S. economy not to a more productive economy, but rather toward a cataclysmic end. And more importantly, I want to ask David what advice he may have for common folks given that view. And David will be with us in the second half of today's show. After our first commercial break, Michael Timmons, he's the president and CEO of Fury Gold Mines, will be with me to talk about some very solid news that was announced this morning surrounding that company's Euclair project. That's a gold project in Quebec. It is certainly an exciting story, and the Fury Gold Mines company has several projects that I think make this company, in my opinion, very undervalued. But right now, I'm really happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with me once again to share his thoughts on key markets. And so thank you so much for joining us today, Michael. And of course, I'm sure on everybody's mind today, a lot of people that listen to this show are certainly invested in gold one way or another, either through the shares or through the bullion. And gold has just really not been able to rise at all, despite all of this massive monetary stimulus. What are your thoughts about gold, and what are your technicals telling you?
Well, our technicals are telling us that we've had this view for some months now, that gold is pretty much in link with T-bonds, or the popular ETF TLT, which is a long government bond ETF, in terms of their trend direction, their behavior, up and down. Mm-hmm. In other words, as rates have risen over the last, especially since January, Gold has dropped since the rally high in January, and in coincident with the T-bonds, not quite as severely and straight down as the T-bonds have. Gold is more eroded. And to give you a number, just for example, gold doubled between late 2018 and the summer of 2020. Doubled, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And over the last 8 full months, from top daily close to today's low close, which, by the way, is not a new low in price for gold. Gold made a lower low earlier this month. It came close today. Was a 17.8% pullback. Took 8
yeah.
months for gold to give up 17.8%.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know when you look at a chart, especially if you're real close up and looking at dailies or weeklies, it looks mm-hmm. very severe.
Mm-hmm.
But when you stand back and look at 2, 3, 4 years of gold action, monthly bar chart, for example,
mm-hmm.
we had a thunderbolt of an advance, the first bull leg. Okay, again, it doubled the price, and I don't think that's the end of it. And now it's taken 8 months to arm wrestle 17.8% pullback. Now, our analysis of the T-bonds and of gold argues that what's happened momentum-wise, not price, the price chart continues to look staircasingly lower, you know, is that it looks like basing action. In fact, ever since November, even though we've lost price since November, it looks to us like basing action. And if we flip it upside down and look at the S&P 500, it looks like monthly momentum topping action. So
mm-hmm.
I think April's going to be interesting, and I think it may surprise people who are now fearful of the gold drop, think T-bonds are going to continue to rise in yield, drop in price forever, and the S&P is going to go up forever. So I think those people are going to be shocked, because I think there's going to be a turnaround. As for silver, which we still favor over gold, though lately it's been weaker than gold the last several days especially,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is still $2 above the lower price it's seen in the last 8 months, which, by the way, occurred several weeks after its high. Whereas we got up to 29 plus in August. A couple weeks later, you're down to 22, under 22.
Mm-hmm.
We're under 24 right now, just barely.
Mm-hmm.
So silver is really sort of in the upper part of the lower half of its range of the last 8 months, unlike gold, which is staircased lower. Silver has been in a box.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, right now my thought is not, gee, should I get out? It's more, should I double my position
mm-hmm.
in gold and silver related?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in that. That's my bias right now.
mm-hmm.
I'm looking for any excuse right now, and I think I'll get some as soon as we roll into April.
Mm-hmm.
to initiate add to positions. So
mm-hmm.
that's our thought.
Well, that's certainly the way it is. I mean, silver is always more volatile, and so, you know, when the bull markets are, when the precious metals are in an uptrend, silver usually outperforms gold, and then the downside, it usually goes down more than gold. So that's
yep.
it's just the way it is, right? So I guess you have
more
to...
More emotional. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah, and there's more emotional, and you have more chance once if you have a good reading of the upside. So we'll be watching for your... For your key, you know, for your hints on which way you think markets are going. So we're in a basing phase right now. You think perhaps we could see a turn in April then, I guess, possibly.
Yes, evident on momentum indicators, not so much on the price. Price is always sort of delusional. You know, it always looks terrible at
yeah.
a low, and it looks
mm-hmm.
great at a high.
Mm-hmm.
Momentum usually gives you warnings about
yeah.
pending trend change. And right now, all of our stuff we see says be more looking for a bottom. Don't be looking for further decline, certainly not sustained decline.
Well, I certainly, over the years that I've followed your work, that momentum indicator, you always show that momentum chart below the price chart. And that really has been very, very helpful in convincing me not to panic out of gold a lot of times, or whatever the market is. Very, very helpful, Michael. I think that's one of the things that's really what makes your work stand out. What about the dollar then? The dollar is looking strong on the index, strong, quote unquote,
right.
on the index.
The dollar really it's impressed a lot of people, which is almost makes me chuckle, because right now it's 3.5% off of its low of early this year.
Uh-huh.
Okay, 3.5% of groveling rally.
Uh-huh.
Our intermediate timescale measures of the dollar suggest it's more of a short here than anything else. Also, you're in the lower quadrant of the last six-year price range in the dollar. The lowest price the dollar saw since late 2014, dollar index I'm talking about, was just above 88 level. The highest it saw was 103.5, almost 104, back in 2017. Right now we're trading at 93. So we're three or so points, almost 4% off the low, but it's taken us all this many months to get up here. I don't think it's a sustained rally. I think it's just an interruptive upside correction in the dollar after last summer's very sharp drop in the dollar. So I don't trust that to sustain on the upside. And that's probably going to be one of the factors that helps gold here in this next quarter, is a rollover of that dollar rally.
Well, it would certainly seem like a very logical relationship there. So just a comment on Bitcoin, perhaps, Michael. I know that you track all of these things and, you know, all kinds of markets that people we don't talk about very often. Bitcoin, how does that look to you?
Well, it's still in positive trend via long-term metrics that we use. But it's built structure below it, meaning when you look at a momentum chart, there are levels you don't want to go back down to. And they're probably right now in the high 40,000s. We're in the high 50,000s, I think, right now. So it's very volatile. We know that. Meaning it's very enthusiastic. Which is not necessarily good. Our problem with Bitcoin is not that it's not ultimately viable as a means of exchange, but that governments are going to clamp down on it. And the reason they're going to have to is because to the extent that cryptocurrencies supplant the usage of fiat currencies, it undercuts central banks' ability to control money supply, have an impact on interest rates, et cetera, because this non-governmental money is out there competing with them. So we've heard phrases from Yellen accusing Bitcoin of criminal-type behavior, as if she's moved to regulate or prosecute it or something. And the same with Lagarde of the ECB. They both made statements that are very nasty about cryptocurrencies, which to me is a hint of future policy. So I think as Bitcoin gains in audience, it becomes more and more threatened by central banks and federal governments. That's an issue that has not been debated, I don't think, much by the people buying Bitcoin.
Well, we are just about out of time, but I would just like to get a quick comment. Isn't that also true of gold, though?
Well, yeah, it is.
Greenspan talked about it.
Remember Roosevelt? Banned it domestically, and you had to turn your gold in and so forth. But you sit back and think about it a minute here. It's highly unlikely they'll get away with that. Gold is so pervasive now. So many people, even people who aren't free market oriented, they own gold. It's insurance for them. It's safety for them. If you try to take that away from them, there'll be a rebellion. You will have massive violation of the law if they try to. I don't think they'll attempt to do anything about banning gold.
If anything, we might have to see a reassertion of gold as money in some form or another.
It wouldn't
perhaps
shock me that the Chinese take the lead on that, and maybe even the Russians in terms of backing their currencies with gold, and then. The thought process will creep across the world at some point as the monetary crisis deepens and deepens.
Yeah, well, that's certainly an idea that Alistair MacLeod has and has talked about on this show, and we shall see. It's certainly, but anyway, gold, silver in a basing process, as are the T-bonds. So we'll watch, and maybe April we get a turnaround. And April is, I guess, it starts in about 2 days. So. All right, Michael. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts again. Always welcome. Always always great to have you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jake.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because, Michael, we're going to be all talking to another Michael. That's Michael Timmons with a very interesting, I think, up-and-coming company, Fury Gold Mines, that has several very, very strong projects, and he's going to talk to us about some news that the company just put out this morning. So we'll be right back with Michael Timmons.
Be
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canadian exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable, high-grade gold assets across its 3.5 million-ounce portfolio. Led by a management team of proven explorers and developers, Fury aims to generate major catalyst and performance per share by advancing exploration campaigns across Canada. Fury is well positioned to create value for investors with low risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under Fury. To learn more, go to FuryGoldMines.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have with me Michael Timmons, the president and CEO and a director of Fury Gold Mines. It's a company that I'm covering in my newsletter and one that I'm quite excited about. It's a company that has several, I think, very, very, very good projects that it's developing, and it has the management team and, the personnel to really succeed. Michael has had over 20 years of experience as a mining executive from his work with a number of companies and names like Agnico Eagle, Placer Dome, and he was vice president of corporate development at Agnico Eagle, where he played a key role in the development of the Kittila mine in northern Finland and in the acquisition of Osisko Mining for $3.9 billion. So he's had a lot of experience, and he's coming to head up Fury Gold Mines. He's been there now for a little while. I guess I'm thinking about a year or so. But Fury Gold Mines trades in Toronto. It actually trades in the New York Stock Exchange as well under the symbol FURY, both in Toronto and in the U.S. I saw this morning in U.S. dollars it was $1.16. 117 million shares, thereabouts, about 137 million market cap in U.S. money, which I think is a very modest market cap given all this company has going. It has various projects. We want to talk today about the Eclair project, which is, I would say, their most advanced project, but it's in Committee Bay. That's in Nunavut. There's a couple of projects in Nunavut, and it's out Homestead Ridge out in the west coast out in British Columbia. So it has a lot of things going on, and so we're really happy to have Michael with us again. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Thank you, Jay. Happy to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here, and I Fury has had a preliminary economic assessment in 2018, $1,250 gold. This is on the Eclair project, 5% discounted net present value of $260 million. That's a $1,250 gold. But you're not certainly not content, and you've been working hard at expanding the project, I guess. And you had some news that came out today, I think, is very encouraging in that regard. Can you talk about what your objectives are, first of all, for Eclair, what the company's objectives are, and then perhaps talk about today's news and how that impacts what impact that might have on your plans going forward?
Sure. As we've said previously, our aim at Eau Claire in Quebec over the next 36 months is to double the current 1 million ounce resource. That was what we said out of the gate 5 months ago when we became a company. It's not what you see, it is what you get at Eau Claire. There's a vast amount of growth potential that we saw when we were doing our due diligence. And certainly, as we're putting more and more drill results out, including the one that you referenced that we put out earlier today, we're starting to kind of fill in that proof of concept that, mm-hmm. We can actually double the resource.
The first drill program, again, was really designed to kind of survey the deposit and the surrounding deposit trend to test areas of obvious expansion and extension that a lot of projects do have, but also look to target new areas of potential and to get a view as early as possible as to whether we can do this rescaling. Is it achievable or not? And with the most recent results we put out, we believe that it is. And so the results we put out this morning are from our target B panel at Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. You know, a meter of 15, 1.3 meters of almost 9, and together with the previously announced B1 hole, which was 3 meters of about 2.6, suggest quite a significant fluid pathway and the continuation of that structure 600 meters away, which, you know, a lot more drilling is required to really say what it is and all the confirmation drilling in behind that. But, you know, for us, even at this early stage, significant expansion potential has been demonstrated in our view. Just as important with the drilling announcement we put out this morning was the fact that we hit a second structure at depths of in behind that panel. It's on another contact, which really could, you know, change the game if that tracks back to surface. I mean, we can we can always say, you know, we caught a fish this big, you know, and if that actually does track back to surface, it's going to be something, it's going to be something special. We're repositioning the drill to go and test the depth extensions of the surface expression, right? So, you know, 2.6 meters at 13, 1.5 at 12, near surface. Again, for Eau Claire, and to your earlier point, it is early days. We're just starting out with this project. But, you know, we're obviously super excited about the results that we're seeing with this deliberate and bold step-out drilling that we've done. So we've been active for only 4 months, technically active, and I'm pretty proud so far what the technical team has been able to deliver to date.
Yeah, so what is the sort of the footprint of the project then, your existing resource? What is it now, the existing resource is?
The existing resource is around 1 million ounces at about 8 grams per ton.
Wow,
from our perspective, at a 3.5 gram per ton cutoff grade in the PEA that you referenced, there's 1.3 million ounces at 6.5.
Okay, and I suppose, well, of course, it's always dynamic. The everything's changing, and when you do a PEA, so by the time you finished it, the prices have changed, the costs have changed, everything else. So, you expect if you get a double, you do another economic assessment. If you double the resource,
we do another economic assessment. I think if we, you know, if over the next 24 to 36 months we continue to drill, we can continue to build out and demonstrate scale. The other half of our project is actually all of the deposit drilling or the infill drilling we're doing in and around some of these resource blocks that we're trying to stitch together back up at the resource proper. And so as we go and do that, that's obviously going to lead out to, you know, more and more drill results outside of the current resource. And I think that, you know, the next thing people can expect from us is a resource update. Parallel to what we're doing with exploration, we're obviously doing kind of the less sexy stuff, which is all that background environmental and geotech and mining studies and metallurgical production testing and everything else. And so by the time 24, 36 months comes along and we have a quite a nice updated resource, right after that, as quickly as we can, we're going to come out with a pre-feasibility study and not redo another PEA.
Okay, that would make sense, and because of all that other work you're doing, that's really moving towards production. Is the ultimate goal then is to get Eau Claire into production on your own?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you have the skill sets
and
there.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the top three people of the company are from Goldcorp, Agnico, and Newmont. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're, you know, obviously with, you know, decades and decades of experience working at the majors, we're more than happy to come down cap, grab a project that we can see that fits directly on top of our skill sets and that we can kind of drive into production. Right. I mean, our core skills are de-risking projects, taking big chances to drill these things out. let's not forget that Eau Claire has been around for a long time. Right?
Yes, it
has. This thing has been drilled for 20 years, right? And what we want to do is, we would love to double this thing in 20 weeks, right? when we do the exploration, it's almost like a fill or kill perspective when it comes in, right? Let's go and find out how big this thing can be ultimately, and then design a program around that. I mean, it always should be that simple when guys move projects ahead.
Michael, I would like to conceptually, in my own mind, see what you're talking about, this new structure that you found that may be a game changer. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it could be very important. Is there a place on your website? Are there some illustrations where people might be able to go and see that, conceive and conceptually see what you're talking about and what you put out in your press release?
Absolutely. You would go. The best place to go is to our corporate presentation that should be updated now on the deck.
Okay.
On the web. On the website, starting on slide 9.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I'm going to go there and maybe comment on it this week in my letter. So you also have a lot of several other projects that are very, very interesting. For sure, the Committee Bay project up there. Your season is very short up there in Nunavut. But what might be going on there this year? What might we look forward to?
Yeah, I always love talking about Nunavut. People love it, and we get more and more questions about it as we, it's spring. People start to think, hey, what's the group going to do this summer? And to your point, this is elephant country. It's part of a world where, we go up, and probably one of the last places around where you can legitimately go out all by yourself and find a large-scale, high-grade gold deposit. We're going to be drilling 3 bluffs, right? The further north you go up in Canada, you have to have a critical mass. You have to have a critical mass of size in order to justify the costs of, suggesting to people that you want to build a mining operation. Yep, and you also have to have critical mass of grade. We have a very nice, very tightly packed 1.25 million ounce resource at over 7.5 grams per ton. So from a grade perspective, we're there. And so it's just a matter of, again, the next, next time horizon, 24, 36 months of expanding that resource. And we think we can double that resource, which will take us halfway to that, 5 million ounce real critical mass that one would need in order to kind of get over the economics hump that you basically need to get through.
Yeah.
We're going to look there's something called the AK corridor that's about 15 kilometers to the northwest, which is another big one that we're going to look at. And then finally, we're going to step out over to our Raven project, which is a structural control target with historical high-grade intercepts back drilling in 2005. So these hasn't been followed up, and so we've decided to kind of pivot over there as well. See if we can get anything out of that satellite deposit. So it's pretty exciting up there this summer.
Good. And the drills will start turning. You're going to do some drilling there this year?
It will be drilling. It'll be a minimum of 5,000 meters, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll probably spool up at some point in June. Because of COVID, we were unable to do a spring mobilization of fuel. And so what we want to do now is likely access Nunavut through northern Manitoba rather than kind of going through Rankin or impacting any of the towns. I think we'll be surgical, move in, get the drilling done, and get out. As these vaccines go out and as people get more comfortable with proximity and everything else, I still think given all of the vulnerable communities that we have up north, that we should be responsible and go in and get the work done and get out.
All right. Just with about 30 seconds or so left, what about Homestake Ridge? Can you make any comments on that in British Columbia?
Homestake Ridge, the program plans right now to follow up on a lot of the historical high-grade hits, which the guys haven't really been able to follow up on because last year they were focusing on this 2020 PEA that they put out. It's a fun project to drill, easy access, which is an interesting comment given that it's in the BC's Golden Triangle, which is notorious for crazy topography, tough, you know, helicopter supported. We're blessed with infrastructure being at the southern tip of the Golden Triangle, and we're going to go up there and follow up on that project. Again, that's 80% gold, 20% silver. Our focus with the drilling and the work is going to be on the Homestake, predominantly silver zone. And so we're pretty excited to kind of extend that. And again, it's not unlike Eau Claire, where we're going to be, hammering the resource, doing some significant step outs, in relation to that project, and then some special things as we drill deep and look for some more exotic targets with respect to exploration.
All right, very good. We'll have to leave it go at that. Michael, thank you so much for being with us. A lot of things to keep an eye on, and we're certainly going to want to do that. I think it's a company that's probably not gotten the attention it deserves, but that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you here. Lots to look forward to, I think. So thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look to keep up with you in the future as well.
Perfect. Thank you, Jay.
All righty, folks. That is it for this segment. David Stockman's coming with us after the commercial break, so don't go away. We'll be right back with David Stockman.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSXV and GTBAF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their district-scale Dixie Project in the renowned Red Lake Mining District of Ontario. Having made multiple high-grade near-surface gold discoveries, GBR's capital efficiency has allowed them to be fully funded to complete a very active 300,000-meter drill program through 2021. Stay up to date on what's been considered one of the best-performing exploration stocks in the last 3 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have David Stockman with me once again. It's been a number of months since he's last been on the show. And I imagine most of you know David Stockman. Certainly, you've seen him on television or on the business channels and so forth. But, he's maybe some of the younger people don't know David, but those of us at my age certainly do because he was in the news in a big way during the Reagan administration. He worked there as director of office management and budget from 1981 to 1985. Prior to that, he had been a member of Congress from the state of Michigan. And then after his after he worked in politics, then he went to work at Blackstone Group and also Solomon Brothers. So he's had both the political and the Wall Street experience. I think he has a sense coming from Michigan and coming from a family that, I don't think David had a silver spoon put in his mouth. So he sort of gets middle America and people that actually create wealth, actually do things to make our lives better, as opposed to people that just pick pockets on Wall Street. So it's always very helpful to have David, and I'm really glad that he could join us again. Thanks for being with us, David.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for that introduction. Your words there reminded me of my campaign theme way back in 1976 when I first ran for Congress and was elected as a Republican congressman from Michigan when I was 29 years of age. And I thought I'd go to Washington and turn things upside down and straighten people out. And I spent a decade trying to do that, both in Congress and in the White House. And, you know, the resistance ended up being far more formidable than I could have ever imagined as a young man. And now here we are, you know, 35 years later, and we're up against the same forces, all the only, you know, quadruple in magnitude. Yeah. Things are going on today, like the size of the federal annual deficits, the rate at which the national debt is soaring, the rate at which the Fed is printing money, $120 billion per month. Yeah. These kinds of things may sound like par for the course to younger people or mm-hmm. people who have not been paying attention until recently. But if you go back to my own lifetime in Washington, these ideas would have been considered crazy,
totally, absolutely,
unorthodox, even by you know, liberal Democrats at the time. I'm not talking just about Republicans. So we've drifted so far off the deep end, I was saying the other day, that it's almost impossible to know where the shore is any longer.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot to talk about here, and a lot of it is pretty serious and dangerous stuff that people need to be aware of.
Oh, for sure. Well, David, don't you think that, I mean, I have to think that maybe you could see that unless this budget was gotten under control, that it would keep getting worse. I mean, it's like a little bit like any addiction. The more you do, the more addicted the more you partake of something that is addictive, the more you become addictive. And it seems to me that we are in a place where there's no turning. It becomes harder and harder to right the ship the longer you go. And I think it's just impossible now, politically impossible. And the system has to break down. You know, I wanted to ask you what really got me to pick up the phone and try to get you on the show again was an article you wrote, Sleepy Joe's Next $3 Trillion Dollar boondoggle. And before we get into that, though, I'd like to just have you tell people, your service, your David Stockman's Contra Corner, which I subscribe to. Tell our listeners what your objective is with this, with almost a daily article that you put out, right?
Yeah, it's a daily newsletter. It's totally independent. It's my thinking. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of unusual in the sense that it's based on almost 50 years of experience, both starting in Middle America on a farm, ending up in congressman as a young, conservative supply-sider, experiencing the effort by the Reagan administration to turn the ship of state, and then another couple of decades on Wall Street. Very few people have that range of experience, and I don't claim to be, you know, any more wise or brilliant than the next guy, but when you put all that experience together and create some filters and have some historically rooted vantage point that is more than just what I call the recency bias of whatever they were saying on, you know, CNBC or CNN or the Washington Post or the rest of them yesterday or last week. I think you get a different perspective that's highly useful. So that's what I do every day, 5 days a week, and my publication, Contra Corner. So one day it's about some developments on Wall Street. The next day it's about Sleepy Joe's next $3 trillion boondoggle. Another day it's about what's the real facts and truth about the COVID disaster that we're going through now and the lockdowns and, you know, the Fauci, Dr. Fauci's of the world telling us, that doom is still upon us. So I address all of these because I think people in their political life or their investment endeavors need perspective, need a framework, need some historical grounding to interpret the developments and facts that constantly bombard us day in and day out in this 24/7 world. So that's really what David Stockman's Contra Corner does. It's a subscription service. It's a dollar a day.
A dollar a day.
I consider that pretty reasonable. It's a half a Starbucks if you're addicted to that. I think, I have a lot of subscribers. People find it pretty useful for a lot of reasons. I don't give investment advice. I don't tell people what stock to be buying or selling or where gold is going or whether Bitcoin is going to 100,000 or 1,000. But I do provide perspective to help people understand that we're in the most massive financial bubble in recorded history, and that everything is being inflated, the good, the bad, and the indifferent. It's sort of, Jay, like that old saw you've heard about what happens when the police raid the house of ill repute. And the answer is, well, they carry out the good girls, the bad girls, and the piano player, too. And what I'm saying, recently is everything is being carried, taken to absurd levels by this overall bubble. But when it busts, Katie, bar the door, get out of the way, because everything is going to come down. Those that deserve massive contraction, like Tesla, which, was valued at 1,200 times its net income, if you believe that's net income, and it really isn't. It's just regulatory credits captured because of this whole, carbon thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's the kind of perspective I provide, and it's the kind of thing I'm sure we're going to be talking about today.
Right. So let's get into this Sleepy Joe's $3 trillion boondoggle. In that article, you referred to a New York Times supposedly leak. It was, leak in quotes, who knows?
Yeah, right.
I think the leaks are very suspicious leaks these days. But it suggested that the Biden administration would propose a $3 trillion so-called stimulus program. I guess maybe they've sort of come out with that and are talking about it. I think I heard something at lunch today about that. It would be an infrastructure, education, workforce development, and fighting climate change with the aim of making the economy more productive. Well, that's the propaganda anyway. And it says, in your article, you not only made it clear that you're not buying the Times notion or the notion that things are going to get better as a result of it, and you said, and I quote, "Indeed, the New York Times write-up of the latest Biden boondoggle tells you all you need to know about why we do not have just a standard-sized economic slump ahead, but a veritable calamity." So talk to us a little bit about why this is more, why what you see coming is more than just a garden variety recession.
Yeah, well, in the old days, we used to have this saying. In fact, Ronald Reagan used to say that, the most dangerous words in the world are "I'm from the government and I'm here to help you."
Right.
I think a variation of that is Biden's plan, which I guess is going to be detailed in some length tomorrow, which claims it's going to make the American capitalist economy more productive to pile another $3 or $4 trillion spending on top of, and that's what I was addressing in this article, the veritable explosion of spending that we've had in the year since the whole COVID lockdown thing started in March. We are now with this $1.9 trillion so-called COVID relief measure. We're now $6 trillion into this in a matter of just 12 months. They've added $6 trillion. And one of the things I did in this article is to say, we have gotten so far, off the deep end here and out of control that they're fixing problems 2, 3, 5 times over not even blinking twice about it. For instance, I computed very carefully on a month-to-month basis the actual loss of wage and salary income since the February 2020 peak. Now, remember, that was when Donald Trump was saying, it's the greatest economy ever. No one had seen, a hint of COVID really coming. That was the peak of the expansion of the cycle. income, wage and salary income was about $805 billion that month. So I said, well, what if the COVID and the lockdowns and all of the what I call economic martial law had not come along and totally decapitated the economy, and we had stayed at $805 billion a month of wages and salaries versus mm-hmm. what actually happened. Mm-hmm. What was the shortfall through January of this year? The answer was, you know, about $280 billion.
Wow. Well,
now, $280 billion may sound like a big number, but just the stimmy checks alone, you know, the $1,400 we got, the $600 before that, the $1,200 before that, add up to almost $1 trillion, okay? And then if we add on top of that all of the additional unemployment benefits that have been put in these so-called, what I call, everything bailouts, mm-hmm. we have another $600 billion. Now, that's not the state programs, which were there and would have taken care of most of the layoffs anyway. But on top of that, remember, they were giving $600 extra a week, and now it's $300 extra a week, yeah. and a lot of different people have been added to the coverage. So what I'm trying to get at here is that just in the stimmy checks and in the unemployment add-ons or top-ups, we have $1.6 trillion going into households, bank accounts of workers. That is a number roughly six times bigger than the loss of wages and salaries during the Incredible. Period in which all this money has been appropriated. So what I'm trying to say is this is out of control. It is, and it's happening for a reason that we go back to over and over again, and that is the Fed is the great enabler. It's made it all right. possible. You were mentioning, you know, the addictive personality before, mm-hmm. The more you use, the more you want. But there's always a fixer, okay? The addict doesn't remain an addict very long without a fixer, and the right. Fed is the fixer.
Right.
Because I was there. We were talking about this in the 70s and the yeah. 80s when the Fed wasn't printing the money, when you had Paul Volcker saying, yeah. you know, we're going to have to do what we have to do to get inflation under control and get sound money restored. There was no Fed fixer to monetize the debt. Basically, you know, snatch credits from thin air and pump $120 billion a month into Wall Street to you know, buy that volume of debt and thereby keep interest rates from reflecting the true supply-demand balance. So it's been the Fed year after year, especially after the late 80s, that has come in, distorted the market, really destroyed honest price discovery, monetized so much of the debt that the politicians have become, and I know this is not a delicate term, but I say it, they've been euthanized. You know, they're brain dead.
Right.
They've been lobotomized when it comes to the fiscal equation. Back in my day, they feared deficits because they knew that financing them honestly in the bond market would drive up yields and interest rates. Back home, people would find their mortgage rates going up. Small businesses would find the borrowing costs to fund their inventory were becoming painful or excessive. And the word would come back to Washington, you know, control the deficits, run some kind of sane fiscal policy.
Right.
But now, nowadays, 30 years later, the Fed has made all that unnecessary. The interest rates until the last few weeks were less than 1% on the 10-year, which is crazy. In fact, last August it touched, as you might remember and many people remember, at 0.5, a half a percent for right. 10-year money in a world where the inflation rate is 2%. It's totally absurd. But anyway, as a result of that, there is no longer any fear whatsoever of deficit finance, of rising, in fact, exploding public debts, because no pain is occurring back home. And if Congressman, I was one of them, so I know, don't hear from the local car dealers and farmers and small mm-hmm. manufacturers. You know, they're happy to vote money for any other interest groups that might line up, and that's exactly what's happened with this $6 trillion. So we have a broken system that's enabled by the Fed, and until we get a sweeping house cleaning mm-hmm. at the Federal Reserve, you know, this is going to go on until they finally, you know, push the system over the edge and we have some kind of unfortunate, major financial catastrophe. Right. I would certainly hope that that can be avoided, but with each passing episode and each passing year and month, it becomes almost more inexorable that we're heading for a crash landing. I just don't see any way around it.
Yeah, it's hard to see any way out of it. And it seems to me that, as you say, the Fed is the enabler, and it's sort of anesthetized. I think you said euthanized, but I would say anesthetized people to the pain of what lies ahead. I mean, it seems to me in the process we are destroying capitalism, David, because this massive deficit has to be financed. The Fed can't allow interest rates to creep up much more than they are now, I dare say. I saw the 10-year was at 1.7 something today. Yeah. So it's gone up dramatically. But where were we recently when our current Fed chairman did a turnaround? Was, you know, we reached the level where the markets were starting to implode, and then he just turned around and pumped more money in the system. But it seems to me you can't have capitalism if you destroy the price of capital, which is interest rates. When you don't allow interest rates to go where the market needs them to go, you are essentially, and I don't suppose these congressmen have a clue, that they are in fact allowing the Federal Reserve to destroy capitalism. And maybe they don't care in the Democratic Party. And maybe some Republicans don't either. I don't know. It seems to me what they're looking for is to tear apart our republic, basically to give us a democracy which becomes a mobocracy without any protection of the minorities. It seems to me that's where we're headed. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you put it pretty succinctly. On the other hand, you know, I don't think congressmen are dumb. Some of them are fairly well read and educated, mm-hmm. but they go by the squeaky wheel principle.
Yeah.
And as long as this thing drifts along and the kind of mainstream narrative is that this is natural, you know, mm-hmm. you and I would think 0.5 on the 10-year was utterly unnatural, ridiculous, or even 1.5% yield when the running inflation rate averaged over any period of time is 2% is also ridiculous. People don't put up 10-year money, their savings, to have it eaten away by inflation with no return. And that's essentially what the proposition is today. Yeah. But congressmen have lived with this kind of drift that we've had so long because the Fed has had its big fat thumb on the supply-demand equation so heavily. And in the last year, you know, it's really gone crazy. In August 2019, when the bond yield hit the low of 50 basis points, mm-hmm. the Fed balance sheet was about $3.7 trillion. It's now $7.7 trillion.
So it's incredible.
In that short period of time, they've printed over $4 trillion.
Yeah.
And all of that is you know, you can think of as just false demand for debt that's being hived off the market, put in a vault at the Fed, and thereby totally distorted the price discovery process. You say that, and I have a kind of an add-on to the thought, and that is the worst combination in the world is free money and free markets.
Yeah.
Just like the thing that doesn't work is capitalism without prices of the most important items in the whole economy,
right,
which is the capital market.
Okay, David. We're out of time already. It's incredible. Okay. We just got started. We just got warmed up a little bit here.
And, yeah, I think so.
I'm sorry
to
say. So, real quickly, what should people be doing? I mean, first of all, they should sign up for your letter because you have a lot of advice, not investment advice, but helping people understand the dynamics of what's going on. But aside from that, I guess people that are out of debt, where should they be putting their money? They have some extra money. Well, average people.
The first thing is don't go for the siren songs. I'm hearing this one now that we went through this terrible thing last year, but look, behold, in front of us is another version of the roaring 20s a century later. No way, not possible. The 1920s were a totally different world than we have today. You don't even have to think about it. Mm-hmm. So I would say you have to get out of the bond market and the stock market and stay clear, no matter how tempting, because when this thing adjusts, it's going to adjust violently and rapidly before people can get out of the way. And that's a big, I think there's almost a rule of physics here. The longer they inflate this bubble, the more traumatic and more violent and more rapid will be the adjustment when you know, the last sucker finally buys.
The last sucker. Yeah. We'll have to leave it go at that. We don't want to be the last sucker. That's for sure. David, thank you so much for being with us. It's always very, very good to have you. Thank you.
Great to be with you, Jim.
Do it again sometime soon, I hope. All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, Michael Hudson of Hannon Metals will be with us. Alistair McLeod will be with us to talk about Biden's last throw at the geopolitical dice. And maybe we'll get Michael Oliver to come back on. I'm going to try. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Firefox Gold is actively exploring in Finland, where recent discoveries have sparked a new gold rush. Firefox controls a major portion of a prospective gold belt, giving the company a distinct advantage for exploration and strategic partnerships. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, will put Firefox on the crest of the coming wave of gold discoveries. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.